You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Nathan Zagura, Michael Regai. One more hour to go on this Tuesday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And as we like to do at this time, we are going to go around the league with the Blitz. And we are going to kick things off right now by going to St. Louis, home of the Rams, with the second and 13th overall picks in the 2014 NFL Draft. Joining us, Nick Wagoner, the Rams beat writer for ESPN.com. Nick, thanks for joining us. We'll start here. You are the Rams front office. You've got the second pick in the draft. Who are you taking?
Yeah, my personal opinion is Sammy Watkins, and the reasons are multiple. They need help on the offensive line, but they haven't had a number one receiver since Torrey Holt, guys, and they haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2007, and they haven't even had a receiver reach 800 yards since 2008. So this is a team that used to have Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt regularly putting up 1,000-yard seasons. They haven't had that guy in a long time, and I think this is the first chance they've had to really get one of those number one type of receivers, and I think they need to take advantage of it.
Nick Wagoner, did the Rams definitively, I mean, over the top, want that pick, or might they be enticed to trade if they can find a partner to dance with?
Yeah, I think a trade is their preferred method, actually, and I think that's why you're hearing a lot of the kind of the rumblings and things about Johnny Manziel and stuff like that. They're not going to take a quarterback at number two, unless this is the biggest smokescreen of all time. They've openly supported Sam Bradford this whole time. Les Snead told me way back on January 5th that they weren't going to take a quarterback at number two, or probably not even in the first round. So I think they're trying to do everything they can to get the value of that number two pickup, make it more appealing to teams, and especially if Jadeveon Clowney's off the board. If he's gone, I don't think that pick has as much appeal. So I think maybe they're trying to do whatever they can to entice the team to move up to make a play.
Nick, when you think about this team, do you believe Sam Bradford is the starting quarterback come September, given everything that you just said about the quarterback talk that's coming out of St. Louis right now?
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if it wasn't Sam Bradford come September, unless it's an injury thing, if he has some sort of a setback in his rehab, which right now, by all accounts, it doesn't seem that's the case. You know, the Rams have said he's ahead of schedule. I know we always hear every team say everybody's ahead of schedule, but
I believe those schedules out.
Yeah, exactly. But I believe he's going to be ready to throw here sometime during OTAs as we get toward the end of the off-season program, and then be ready to go come training camp time, or at least very close to it. So I'd be really surprised. They've given him the public vote of confidence way too many times and way too adamant about it to not have him be the guy come September.
Nick Wagoner joining us, Rams beat writer for ESPN.com in St. Louis. Nick, you're acquired a franchise offensive left tackle. Jake Long went down with that ACL last year. Does that factor into what now are the biggest needs for the St. Louis Rams heading into this draft?
Yeah, I think it has to. Just, I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's a couple things, guys. If you look at their offensive tackles in general, you have Long, who's coming off an ACL and an MCL injury, and he actually played quite well before the injury, but he's continued to have injury issues the last few years, and you wonder what his long-term future is. And then on the right side, Joe Barksdale was kind of a pleasant surprise, a guy who stepped in and played pretty well last year, but he's a free agent after this year, even if he plays well again this year. I think this is a good time for them to address tackle, and Jeff Fisher actually has never taken, as a head coach in 19 years, never taken an offensive lineman in the first round of the draft. So a lot of people think that's a reason that they won't do that, but I also think if the need meets the value, whether it's at 2 or a trade down or at 13, whatever it might be, I think that's a real possibility. And there's connections to some of these guys. Jake Matthews, Jeff Fisher coached his father, and they have a close relationship. He knows what he'd be getting with those bloodlines. And Les Snead's an Auburn guy, and he watched Greg Robinson up close a number of times this year. So I wouldn't rule those possibilities out either.
All right, Nick, final one for me here. You said you would take Watkins at 2. Let's say they stay at 2 and 13 as of today. What picks do you think the Rams will make at 2 and 13?
You know, it's really hard. If Clowney is on the board, I think they would take Clowney. If he's not, I think they'd look to trade. And if they can't make a trade, I kind of tend to think that Jake Matthews would win out, to be honest. I know they like Robinson, and they're going to have a private workout with him this week, or at least that's what he's been telling people, that he's going to have a private workout down at Auburn with Rams staff this week. So I think it'd be one of the two tackles most likely at number two. And And my gut tells me that Matthews would get the edge just based on Fisher's history with that family.
Thank you so much. Nick Wagoner from ESPN.com covers the Rams. Appreciate your time today. Now we're going to take this blitz continuing to move around the National Football League. We are going out to Seattle. Liz Matthews, Seahawks beat writer for ESPN 710 in Seattle, joining us. Let's start with the acquisition of Terrell Pryor. Good addition or bad addition for the Seahawks?
Man, let me tell you guys, I got this news on the road driving from Seattle to Boise, Idaho. I had so many alerts, I thought someone died when I came into cell service. But you know what? The Seahawks showing that they're always going to compete. I know the Niners were in the hunt. And when you look at what Seattle had to do, remember, they're last on the waiver wire. If they wanted this guy, they had to trade for him.
Liz Matthews, great to have her, Seattle Seahawks beat reporter. She's from ESPN 710 in Seattle. So that's just the latest, Liz, the Terrell Pryor acquisition of a lot of movement going on with the defending Super Bowl champions, signing players, losing players. Liz, who's been the biggest addition at free agency, and who has been the largest departure for the Seahawks?
You know, and that's it, and I think fans kind of around town have been a little bit worried because they're kind of used to seeing the Seahawks make kind of sexy moves in free agency. Well, this has been a season, guys, where they were fairly stacked at each position, and in fact, you ended up seeing more guys leaving, for instance, Golden Tate, wide receiver Golden Tate, than guys coming in. But the Seahawks are certainly looking to get a number of compensatory picks last year because of everybody that they gave up. But, you know, the latest news coming down from the NFL is they're already looking to work there. We work with Sherman Steele, and they have to save some money for him, have to save some money for Russell Wilson, and you have to save some money for Earl Thomas. So, unfortunately, additions weren't the big deal this offseason.
I'm glad you brought up Richard Sherman, the talk that they're trying to work out a lucrative long-term extension here in Cleveland. Joe Hayden reportedly working on the same thing with the Browns. How quickly do you think the Sherman thing can happen, and do you think he's waiting to see if maybe a guy like Hayden gets extended to help set the market, or is he going to try to set his own market?
I think Richard Sherman has done nothing but set his own margin, and I think Richard Sherman will want and arguably deserves to be the highest paid in the league at that position. I know the Seahawks have kind of targeted the guys that they want to focus on, three of them that I just named. And, you know, these guys have earned their dues. They've earned their paychecks. Seahawks organization has been wonderful at working out all these salary cap issues. And I think that's why you've seen it. They've not been able to financially add a bunch of guys this offseason, nor have they needed to.
Liz Matthews, Seattle Seahawks beat reporter, kind enough to join Cleveland Browns Daily as we talk the Hawks and the NFC West. All right, Liz, what are the biggest differences so far this year that you've been able to detect in the offseason workouts of now a team coming off winning a Super Bowl championship?
Well, it's crazy because actually the team just reported yesterday building, and this offseason seems so short for all of us in the business. You know, basically, we feel like we just wrapped up the season. These guys had a couple weeks off. I know for the Seahawks, going so deep in the season, playing through the Super Bowl, that pushing the draft back and having kind of a later reporting date, really, these couple of weeks makes a huge difference for the team. Everybody had to get back together. Pete and John kind of scout these guys out, look ahead to the draft. It was really a crunch time. So these guys know what they need to do. One Super Bowl is not enough, and they're already preparing for this season.
You got to like that winning mentality. Speaking of preparing for this season, May 8th, the NFL draft starts. What do you think the biggest needs are for the defending Super Bowl champs?
I think the Seahawks, without a doubt, have got to shore up the offensive line. Not only were there injuries last year, but, you know, you lose Brandon Jacquemin to the Jets. They've got to make some additions there. Definitely not a position that could be overlooked. Now, how high they're going to go, you know, Pete and John may be looking to shift things around. There could be some draft day trades, moving positions, but they definitely have to address that offensive line.
Let me ask you this, because it ties into your offensive line question. Paul McQuiston, the veteran with Seattle, now on the Cleveland Browns. What kind of player are the Browns getting in Paul McQuiston at this stage?
You know what? He's a nice guy that you can rely on. You can kind of plop in him anywhere. Unfortunately, he just wasn't able to start here from injuries. But, you know, Pete and John and these guys and Tom Cable, the Seahawks offensive line coach, the number one thing that they looked at that front five was the versatility in the players. You know, you need to play the left side, the right side. They love these guys that are guards and tackles. So you're getting a very well-rounded guy. And, Paul, absolutely no complaints there.
Liz, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
You got it. Good one, gentlemen.
All right.
Great
that
job,
was that's right. That was the NFL Blitz here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, St. Louis, Seattle. Reg, interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Wagoner starting to beat the drum.
Yeah.
You're hearing more about Sammy Watkins at two, but he says he thinks ultimately when it comes down to it, if they don't trade out, Jake Matthews gets the call.
Yep, I would agree with that because of the tenuous nature of where they are with Jake Long. He mentioned Joseph Barksdale on the right side. It was considered just a guy earlier on, so I would agree with that. And Nathan, you and I talked about yesterday all the additions that have been made to the receiving core of the Rams and the fact that they would go out and – but if you feel like you got that guy that could put you over the top and be an elite Pro Bowl type, I would suppose. But I would agree with Nick Wagner that it's going to be Jake Matthews or Greg Robinson.
All right, so we've gotten some insight now on the number two pick from Nick Wagner. John McClain, who covers the Houston Texans, says he believes that if they stay at one, it's Manziel or Clowney, and that if they were to trade out of that spot, then you might see a different pick. But he thinks if they stay at number one, it is going to be Johnny Manziel or Jadeveon Clowney as the top pick for the Houston Texans. So
yeah,
that could be interesting.
Well, and again, makes sense because I've always felt, I brought it up. We talked about it yesterday. There has to be an enormous amount of pressure with John Football blowing up the way he has. Can you imagine, Nathan, if Houston lets him get out of the state of Texas and he becomes what a lot that favor him think he will be, as in a winning, very, very strong quarterback in the NFL? I mean, they'd get killed down there for not taking him.
Absolutely. But that's interesting now because let's say it goes Clowney, Matthews. That means Mack, Bortles,
yep.
Bridgewater,
yep.
Manziel, all on the board at three. Watkins, you're going to have a great opportunity to get a good player there early in the draft, create and also add some fuel to the people for potential trade partners moving up.
Jacksonville's got to take a QB, though, I would imagine, Nathan. Even if you don't adjudge that kind of value to them, the situation that they're in with half that stadium, if that, full on Sundays, I almost think they have to, don't you?
You know what? That's why we're bringing in Pete Prisco, senior NFL columnist for CBS Sports, and a guy who also happens to live in Jacksonville, knows the Jaguars well. We're going to get a little insight on that number three pick right after this here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.